I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So David, I'm really excited, actually. Turned our cameras off. And of course, the podcast is audio only, but I always do the podcast watching the videos. And there's something I like about that. And in a sense, like, our intention today is just to sense make together, to explore what we've both been encountering personally and professionally. You know, in a sense, we're both ensconced in this field called coaching, but maybe you might even not like me saying that, actually, but and so we've got some things to kind of say about our experience of that. And so we're going to do a bit of sense making, and this might be kind of like a fireside type chat, and we'll pull on different threads and see where we end up, and maybe share our deepest desires for ourselves as practitioners and for the industry of coaching, and maybe our frustrations. And so how does that sound to you?
That sounds fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah. And how are you doing as well? You're now a resident of Amsterdam as well.
I am. So a lot of adjustments at many levels, and some have gone well, some have been more of a challenge, but I've never looked back, and I'm really grateful to be here, and I'm much closer to my daughter now, which makes me very happy. So it's good.
Great. Where would you start? You know, if I just said, I'm going to kind of make it pretty broad, the invitation, but where would you start our conversation today? If I was just to say, like, you know, what's a big theme you've been encountering that feels like it would be good to share in our conversation?
So just what comes up for me in the moment, Joel, is what I observe in a lot of our participants is a desire for a new sense of orientation. Many of them have started to realize that a lot of the professional boundaries or rules or are sort of inhibiting their capacity to do what they sense their clients are after. And they're trying to figure out, well, how do I orient myself and how do I identify myself? And then with a world that's feels very upside down in many ways, given what's happened in the States and all the things that's activated, they're just I think there's a real genuine curiosity about kind of where people are supposed to turn. What does this mean? What am I supposed to do? Who am I supposed to be now? So I think these existential questions are clearly, I'm observing, are quite much on people's minds and hearts.
I've got a few things to say about that too, but actually before I do, what would you say to those people? As someone, I think you've thought about this as well. What would you say? What do you say to those people you encounter in your programs?
Well, my first answer is I don't know, because I don't, and I don't make any pretense to know. But we had a session this last week. We're going to do more of these little pop-up sessions, very informal, casual, like this campfire kind of conversations. And in that, I said, there's just some fundamental human needs that I believe we need to address in ways we probably took for granted for quite some time. One is borrowing from a lot of indigenous traditions to release a lot of what feels really heavy now back to the earth and really ground ourselves in a much deeper way than we might have had be to before. I think there's a need for and a hunger for deeper senses of belonging, kind of beyond the sort of superficial professional affinities. And then in that, to begin to, I think we're in this for a long game. So we need to be able to put down much deeper roots, which means stop flitting around trying to acquire lots of things out here, and kind of root ourselves in something that feels elemental to ourselves so that we have courage to just go begin. Well, I believe we need, we don't have quite yet. And it's going to take a lot more courageous experimentation and exploration about beyond what we've once thought coaching was.
What do you think we need that we don't have yet?
So, for me, over the last few years, I've really started to move away from a professional identity as a coach. And realize that my fundamental responsibility as a practitioner is to mature myself. So I had long COVID for 2 years, nearly died in part of that, really did a lot of soul searching and really a lot of investment in my own maturation. And what I found is that it's brought a sense of equanimity and peace and clarity that I've probably not had my whole life. And so I feel like what I observe is that it's a time when we're being asked to elevate ourselves as human beings more than anything else. And so I'm finding that I'm turning away from so much around theory or tools or and much more about the depth of our soul and who we are as humans in ourself and with each other in a time when that's proving difficult for ourselves and many others. And I feel like from that place, new practices are going to emerge.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing. We might even muse on what those I mean, why don't I, what kind of, what kind of practices might emerge? Is that for you something that we can't know yet because, this is a liminal space, this or do you have a sense of what these practices might be?
Mostly the answer is no. I have some sense because some of these are ancient. Cultures have known this for thousands of years. And one of my sort of inspirations comes from at one point I had a chance to visit Freud's apartment in Vienna, which is
Cool.
doubles as a museum now. And I tell the story often about how I didn't really know what to expect. I never was a huge fan of Freud, although I now realize he was misunderstood. But when you walk into the museum and get past the front part, you turn left and you go into, and this is his actual apartment where he lived and worked. You'd go left, and there is the recreated living room where psychology was born, right there. And you could feel it. I mean, I could feel it. All the hair on my arms stood up when I walked in the room. Because I didn't know what I was going to get find. And I thought, wow, this is where those conversations were held. And in reading more about that later, he had a phrase he used with a friend of his. He said he wanted to protect psychoanalysis from priests and doctors. And he said, I want to create a secular ministry of the soul. And I do believe that that was his intention. And so for me, that phrase really has resonated. And so a lot of the things I think that are emerging are going to be what we would in religious circles would be called sacraments, rituals, rites of passage, rituals, ways of being at significant points for people, bringing in many dimensions to and working with people, not having a rational coaching conversation necessarily. And so that comes from two things. It comes from the depth of our own work on ourself, and it comes from the depth of communities we're willing to form and be a part of. So that's part of my thinking.
Yeah, amazing. So this is why I love talking with you, David, because I feel so much resonance with what you're saying. And I think I just feel so aligned with this idea that the invitation right now for coaches is it's all about their own maturity, as in your words, their own consciousness, and that. That's where the difference is made, and that I sense that, yeah, also, coaches rising, we're really orienting now towards like, how can we develop communities of practice, fields, where, my highest intention is a community, even where you step into it and you feel the field that that community is, and that it activates something inside of you. I've been to events like this, where you step on the. I remember being invited to this radical event where they invited people all the way from all around the world, like Bayo Akomolafe was there, Bob Anderson, there was some Sufi masters, students of Adida, right, there were other, just radically amazing people. And when I stepped onto the grounds of this retreat space where we'd all gathered in Switzerland, I literally felt like something in my soul, both like it felt just like literally as I stepped over the threshold of the gate and to the path, I remember just being like, oh my God, like disturbed, but in a very good way. I was like, something's about to happen, So that's my vision for the kinds of communities that can cohere. And I feel that we're being invited in our times to clarify what the transformational practitioner is in our time, and that like you're saying, it's beyond being caught in any kind of more limited definition of being a coach or a therapist or a guide, but it's really, really arising in the moment, depending on what's most needed. And there's this term, mixed mystical arts. I've shared this with you before that my friend Sean Wilkinson brought up, and I think it articulates this sense of the mystic, like that this is, we're being invited into a radical depth. And a depth of practice and consciousness, but also into like transdisciplinary practice and inspiration. That like and maybe I'd like to gather people, almost. So if you think about MMA, like the thing about MMA, like the mixed martial arts, yeah, is that there was if you're only good in one style, yeah, you're gonna lose against your opponents. And so everybody became good at everything, and that the kind of moves you were doing were very much dependent upon the context of that very moment, and what was best. So, in a way, it's a limited metaphor because this is about fighting, but I feel inspired. What would it be like to gather a group of people who don't feel they want to be limited by the current definitions of what's being called a coach, and that what they care most about is deeply serving that person opposite them? And so we all gather and we start to kind of what's the word they would use, like spar together, and meet each other and learn from one another and expand and be surprised and delighted in what our brothers and sisters offer us in terms of their consciousness and what can open up. So, and then just one last thing, and I'll just see where you take it, but I feel like we're being invited to the edges of our experience. That's what I felt in my own life. As we move into this like liminal space, things are very uncertain in the world. It's really obvious right now that things are changing fast, and so therefore it of course I'm being invited to learn to meet myself, to radically include everything that gets stirred up as I situate myself in the world. One of my teachers says life is completely subjective, so that is a very radical position to take on. It's humbling, but it's also very empowering because it puts the emphasis on me and my response to whatever's emerging in my life, and to be able to meet that with love. So that's one side of it. But what I want to point to is this edge kind of practice where, we had this saying when I was at art school, and it was like, when the going gets weird, the weird get going. And it's just this sense of like, okay, as things get crazy in the world, I feel this ever deepening call to be a beacon of light. And that means I want to be enlivened and in my sovereignty to be able to meet and serve. So what I found is that practices such as like dream work and strangely I come back to DJing techno music, and how that's a ritual that moves me into an altered state and teaches me about the creative process. What reading books of inspiring journeys that people take on, whatever it is that brings in that sense of ensoulment that you talked about, because I think that is these are ensouling times, so these are a few thoughts that come up.
That's great. And I think what I'm hearing in the last part of what you're saying too is things that make us feel alive and vital and kind of plug us into pulses that and rhythms and energies that are sort of maybe deeper than we might otherwise encounter. And what comes up for me in that is in addition is something that's starting to bubble up for me in the recent months. If you, from an alchemy perspective, if you remove the darkness and the real darkness and the not good sense of that word of a lot of what's happening in these sort of reactionary governments and figures and current American president being the most foremost example. But if you listen underneath all of that noise, there are actually a couple of interesting energies that are, I think, are important for us not to overlook. So, going back to what I was saying before, that one of the values of a lot of earlier traditions was a reverence for earth and grounding. And I feel like one of the cautions I have for all of us is it's easy to get caught up in sort of elevated elitist conversations with fancy words in them. And which are great, and I find them really interesting and intellectually stimulating. But I wonder, like, in addition to having those kind of conversations that you describe, which I've been in as well and find them quite magical, that a lot of what we're being called to is actually quite, I won't say simpler, but more elemental in the sense of inviting us to talk to different kinds of people. Like, what if we had a gathering, which I've been to in the way back when, of farmers and spiritual teachers, people that work in communities, and people that work in challenged communities, and people that work in universities. And I feel like there's, and this goes back to what I was saying before about this conscious improvisation. I think what's moving forward is not trying to gather lots of stuff in one space, but being willing to be in different kinds of conversations with different kinds of people, so that we are stay grounded in the reality by which most humans live. And I feel that there's a, for me, there's, I think one of the reasons that my work does well is because I feel like I've had plenty of opportunities to be humbled in my life. And I've now seen the really the value of sort of intentional humility, which is not always present in our in the field of coaching. But one of the things when you I'm happiest outdoors, in nature, in the mountains, in the sea, and working in the dirt, and I just find that so grounding. And I feel like we're going to need that, well, because the Earth's in trouble, we're in trouble, and we're going to need conversations that we otherwise probably would not have normally had to try to figure out what is a collective path forward where more of us can thrive. And so I think for me, then coaching becomes something that's not available to most people, will never be available to most people, even with technology's help. And even the construct takes us away from, and so I'm, like one of my papers I'm working on right now is Paulo Freire meets AI. And trying to figure out in that space, what is community and learning and growth and education? What does that look like now? And I feel like that's, I'm finding those kind of intersections really generative at the moment.
I'm fascinated by what you share here, because I've, for example, my daughter being at school and getting to know the parents in my neighborhood, and being invited around for pancakes on a Sunday lunchtime, and just sitting together, two families, together, just it just extraordinarily meaningful and wholesome experiences, and feeling that mycelium effect of knowing people in your neighborhood well, and having those normal conversations. I really thoroughly enjoy it, and so I love that. So I kind of feel excited when you talk about conversations that we don't normally have, and I'm holding for, I think I hold it slightly differently. Like when I talk about, gathering and doing some mixed mystical arts together, it's not necessarily about kind of getting into some highly elevated intellectual, elitist, kind of space. Or is it, or is it? Maybe it is,
I would
but for me,
challenge that some, but yes.
it's actually, if I think about it with my friends, it's actually people are not talking about, this is the whole point, they're not actually talking intellectually about practice. They're actually engaged in a kind of radical intimacy of being human together and exploring that moment to moment. And I think that is, that's what I hold for those types of spaces. It would be the opposite of some kind of rational intellectual space. And so my musing is like, because I feel both is true. It's like on the one hand, in inverted commas, normal people, that's what do I mean? It's like maybe I'm revealing my own kind of like arrogance,
Arrogance,
but
yes.
I love being in everyday conversations. I find them extraordinarily beautiful and meaningful, and I love being in these spaces where people feel like, hey, I don't want to meet in some kind of space where we just talk about the weather and complain about the political system. No, we meet in our shared humanity, and there's a kind of commitment towards some kind of intimacy and aliveness and depth, and that feels also inherently wholesome and beautiful. And so how do those two fit together? I'd never want to impose on anyone that they should show up in a certain way.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking the other day about a piece I was reading along these lines about just sort of questioning, are we sort of bypassing some of the challenges in organizations by identifying some of the issues as individual limitations that need coaching? And does coaching then therefore mask over or collude with dysfunctions in organizations? And my answer is yes. I feel like so much of what we're facing is so systemic that sometimes, yeah, you just need that private conversation or that deeper dive into something. But I feel like, kind of what's coming up for me is you look at the difference between like founders of religions and what happens to their original teachings. And I feel like they were just kind of doing their thing, and often had close circles of friends to help them. And then it kind of gets blown into big things. But and so, these sort of early awakenings from people like Tim Galway or whatever, or John, about kind of how do you help people evolve now becomes this whole giant thing called coaching. And what did we lose in that process? What do we lose by focusing so much on individual conversations that keeps us from raising the conditions in which everyone is working or living? And I feel like so many of the there's so much complexity in the challenges that our clients bring to us that are far beyond what you can solve in a one-on-one conversation. And so, like for me, like historically, I've had private clients, but most of my work in coaching has been intertwined with work in the larger organization, so that people and the systems in which they're working are co-evolving together. And I feel like that's something that the way that we th think about this in our work is we think of our core phrase is, this moment is your curriculum. So, what is this moment asking of you? What is it trying to teach you? What is it evoking in you? And so that we want to be able to, within the integrity of our agreement and our self, to show up with whatever is called for. And so the example I give often is was a very successful woman who an executive I was coaching wasn't very forthcoming always emotionally, but a wonderful person to be in conversation with. And then she showed up to one of our sessions. Something clearly had happened. Her whole state was changed. I had the sense she had been crying, and so I asked her what was going on, and she said that her mother had unexpectedly died just a few days before, and she was just devastated. And one of my pieces of background is I used to be a grief counselor. So we end up talking about that for a while. And it turned out that one of her issues was she said, I'm this leader in this company. I have this high profile. I do all these things. But now I've been sort of foisted into this role in my family of origin to organize her funeral. And I have no idea how I'm. how to do that. I feel completely intimidated. How am I ever going to do justice to our mother? And so we spent the bulk of the coaching session helping her through the planning for her mother's funeral. And so we could meet her in that moment. The curriculum was, this woman is in distress. She has a very specific thing she needs help with. I have expertise in that specific thing. We can connect her leadership style and her leadership identity to what is it like to lead a ceremony and organize a ceremony in this context. And so for me, that was the epitome of what, say, a post-coaching session might be like, where there was a bit of coaching elements to bring out some things in her, but again, going back to bringing this work into the world and their lives as people actually live them. And moving away from just thinking about that everything revolves around the coaching session itself, which I think is a limited view of what we're actually doing. So that was a bit much, but there you go.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah.
the what's the what, can you say what you mean by everything evolves around the coaching session itself? And that it sounds like you're saying that can be a bit of a trap we can fall into. What do you
Yes.
mean by that?
Because it's important to do a good job in a session, right? And I think sometimes coaches get caught up in this illusion that the session is the point. And the session for me is not the point. And we're not the point. Coaching's not even the point. The point is a human being that's on a journey of discovery or change or pursuit or whatever they're after. And we're showing up for 30, 60, 90 minutes, whatever, on that journey. And so I'm just really curious, like, where are they now? What might we do with our time that might be useful for what where they're headed right now? But the vast so we will be a catalyst, and if the session goes well, they can use it maybe as a springboard or some clarification, but really, it's their journey, and the session is just one tiny piece of that. So my job is to equip them to be successful on their journey, not worrying about are they having a great time in the coaching session. And so I feel like coaching is just a way of being with people, and that really what we're trying to do is help them mature themselves so they're more and more capable to succeed in whatever that means to them in their session. And so I'm less worried about, am I doing the right thing as a coach, or how is the session going? I'm really only interested in, is what we're doing serving what the person needs from us right now?
Do you not think that's a kind of standard part of the journey from a beginning coach to a more mature coach? Because I think a lot of coaches I know would agree with what you're saying. I don't think they would say like, that's not right. That's not okay to do that. I think, but I can see that maybe beginning coaches. I remember for myself where you're caught in like, okay, I want to do this well, and maybe even deploy a certain kind of set of skills in the right order or something. But yeah, just curious.
Yeah, I mean, so yes, more advanced coaches and more mature coaches think this way, I suppose. But I'm thinking more about why some of the constraints of coaching are not helpful in the end, because we certify people based on what we observe them doing in a session, and with some sort of prescribed norms about what coaches are supposed to do in sessions, and so. If someone like you or I were to be observed coaching, we wouldn't be recognizable by some of those sort of more normative standards. And again, my curiosity, like through the five maturities work and whatnot, is to understand how do we track the contribution of you as a coach and the coaching session to the journey. And who does the client become? What is the client capable of doing now? And what, if anything, about how they were with us made that difference. Because I think one of the things that, even though I've done research and writing for decades in this space, I've just kind of realized that so much about being human and change is a mystery. And isn't you, it's not linear, it's not obvious, it's really hard to pin down. And if you think about, I'm sure you've had this experience too, but you wake up one day and all of a sudden you feel differently about yourself, or you notice something about yourself you never noticed before. And you think, like, how did that happen? Like, you weren't thinking about it, you didn't read anything, you didn't do anything. All of a sudden, it's like some of the gears moved in your system, and all of a sudden, wow, the world looks totally different, or this person looks totally different. And so if we kind of allow ourselves to surrender more to the mystery of this, and don't, this is where some of the critique, I suppose, of getting too caught up in some of these of fancy language and terminology. I think it's important to just recognize that so much of this is even now unknown. And I think that's fantastic, because then it keeps me, again, humble to just say and observant, like, what's happening here? And what am I noticing? What are they noticing? What seems to be calling our attention? And I'm much more committed to the emergent now than I've ever been. And I find that really helpful.
Yeah, there's a few things you shared that I want to kind of unpack a bit further. I certainly, feel so much in what you're saying around the emergence of following the emergence, in the sense of what's here right now. This moment is your curriculum, I think you said, and that I feel is a really important distinction, that getting away from descriptive ontologies to generative ontologies. And nod to Steve March, who introduced those ideas to me. But that instead of learning methods and theories of human change, or stage-like theories, or it's actually more interesting to develop our capacity to meet this moment, and to kind of be with our clients in a way that invites a kind of unfolding, or a sense of revelation into the mystery, in a sense that it recognizes that you won't you you know you don't know what's going to unfold. And I what I what I'm hearing, and this might take us into this post-coaching space too, is that in some ways my journey as a coach has been this process of unlearning, and it's profound. So, my first of all, meeting the parts of me that want it to go well, that actually try to control the outcome of the coaching, letting go of those, but also, clients who come in from organizations who want a quick fix, this notion of, the coaching should produce results immediately. Now, of course, this is where it gets interesting. Of course, the coaching wants to be effective. If what we're doing is not effective in any way, well, what's the point? But I'm talking about this kind of imposition, this demand upon the moment to resolve things, and get some kind of tool or thing that immediately takes, and of course, again, this is where it gets tricky. There's value in you want, if people that, like you said, with the woman with the funeral, there's that you helped her immediately with what was going on, and that's what was needed. But there's all kinds of injunctions and ideas that can kind of limit the spontaneous illumination of the mystery of coaching and our unfoldment. I think that's what I'm trying to point towards. So, so even including some of the ideas of how a coaching session could go. Could you say what you mean by this phrase, like post-coaching, and what is that space? Maybe that's what we're talking about, really. Maybe the whole conversation is about that. But
So I've been in the coaching space for nearly 30 years now, and And I sort of stumbled upon it and found it was kind of closest to what I wanted to be once I left my first career. And but it has sort of a murky history, and it's a, there's a lot of strange things about how coaching was formed and what it came to be. And now it's, coaching's everywhere, but it's also very muddled. And who gets to decide what a coach is or what coaching does, or and so for me, I just, I recognized pretty early in my life, I think, that I don't fit easily in most places, or in certainly in boxes. And so creating narrative coaching, and then the other bodies of work I've created, basically, as a friend of mine pointed out, see, Dave, you're just a scout. You see things before most of us. You go out there and explore, and you come back and tell us what you found. And so everything I've created is basically just based on observations of myself, of others, of the world, of what actually seems to be working. But I think for me, I've found that there's a lot of attachment to what we think coaching is supposed to be. And there's many of us that sort of let that go and just kind of went on to do our thing. But then I think about, like, for myself, I would like to have more accountability. I would like to have more feedback and continue to grow myself. But, like, where would I go? And so I feel like part of this idea of, and I think coaching's at this huge plateau. There's too many coaches, not enough opportunities. AI is changing coaching rapidly. A lot of the sort of simpler ways of thinking about coaching are completely inadequate for the world that we live in, for the most part. And so I feel like to enable more of us to have vibrant practices to meet the world where it is right now in a way that's very challenging and also very shockingly different than what many of us grew up with, we need to kind of rethink what we're doing. And so for me, I think while coaching moves through this inflection point, I think is what's going to emerge is that there's going to be a subset of people and what those people do that we will recognize as coaching. And I think what I would like to see is some new definitions and new sort of frames around those of us who have moved beyond coaching, but still want an affiliation, want identity, want coherence, want community. Kind of what does that mean? What does that look like? And in which coaching will be part of what we do, but it won't be our primary identity. I'm about to start a really big project in our organization, and part of why they're hiring me is because I'm just going to come work with them as David. And you can have everything that David knows, everything that David has done, and we won't know in any given week what part of David you'll need the most of. But it just frees me from, I'm going to do an OD intervention. I'm going to do a change initiative. I'm going to do some coaching to say, yes, we're going to do all of those things as we need them. And I feel like as the world breaks apart in many ways the challenges rise, I think we're going to need to become, I'm blanking on the word for this now, but kind of what the French would, I guess, called bricoleurs or something, where we're weaving together many things in real time to try to address what we're observing in front of us. And I think that's what people are going to need to draw on are far beyond what we think of as coaching. Does that make sense?
It
Is
does. I mean,
how do you think about that?
well, I think I was thinking the other day, I was talking with someone about this idea of actually teams of people coming together with different specialities for temporarily in order to serve organizations so that they can, bring a kind of boutique, kind of bespoke suite of interventions that are just what that organization needs. And I think that fits in a sense with what you're sharing, And I'm thinking about also this journey of maturity where it's like you at some point when you start out, you start to imbibe the trainings, the coach trainings that you're doing. And that's great because you want some kind of platform within which to work and develop, and that at some point you want to be able to start to articulate what's your own kind of theory of change or what's your own paradigm within which you feel most inspired and that you serve others the most, and that will help you own what you do more. And I think that's incredibly powerful because otherwise you get the danger is you get caught in being like one of the masses, like I'm just a somatic coach or something, or it's like you're trained, you're operating within the average of coaching because that's what the schools are bringing out is like people. So this move towards defining what my own paradigm is incredibly powerful. But if you're only stuck consuming coach trainings, then that can be challenging to give yourself the space to do that. I think this is where for me, like my genius started to come online more, where, I was maybe this is already that post coaching kind of space. But I think beyond that, there's also this kind of space where, you move into a kind of transformational connection with the moment. And I hear you kind of articulating that too. It's like, you start to see that the very systems within which I've been operating create the limits that confine what I do. And actually, I can pick up a system in the moment as it's required and most suited for what's in front of me. But it's actually like you're saying, it's like I'm the one, I'm bigger than the systems, and I'm post-systemic in a sense. I'm picking up these different systems and applying them. And I do think that's the space where you move beyond traditional coaching. Like, for example, and this might sound for some people, like really not what coaching should be, but sharing myself in the coaching session, sharing what it's like to be in contact with my client. And I think that's, you find that within coaching schools, but, being in a real transformational connection where it's like the way coaching has been defined, and especially therapy, it's like you don't reveal yourself at all inside of the coaching. Now, I don't want to project or get caught in transference so much, but even that, even those ideas, which have within therapy have real value to them, and they even those kinds of ideas can become kind of limiting within and keep you within a certain paradigm. So yeah, and maybe we're heading to a place where we'll cultivate what Peter Lindbergh calls these friendships of virtue, where we won't need to go to coaches, maybe because we'll be interacting with each other in ways which brings deep meaning and fulfillment and transformation. So yeah, those are a few thoughts that arise.
That's great. Yeah, what comes up for me when I think of that, I this image came to my mind of like, what if we had, everybody paid, everybody was invited to an event, say 50 people, and everybody put in money. You're not going to pay anybody. Everybody puts money in the pot. But you just move around for a morning, and you enter into coaching conversations with people that interest you and that might have something that you offer. And you might be the coachee one moment and the coach in the next moment, or you might co-coach each other. And like the adage, like don't share of yourself is probably a very prudent one for a beginning coach because you're not mature enough as a coach to not overdo it. Or, but for me, people are facing really difficult issues, and part of showing my humanity is appreciating that I've perhaps wrestled with the same thing. And I think what's what why I created the five maturities was just as the beginning of a thinking around how do I create a structure for myself to think about my current level of maturity and where my blind spots still are, where I need to grow myself, so that I think about if I'm going to just jolt it in a moment with somebody, what does that include and what does that entail or require of me? And I found that that framing has been really resonant for a lot of people to just free them from these boxes, and to look at how to grow themselves and how to interact with others in a way that's more naturally human. And this goes back to what I was saying before, that it's not just fancy conversations with fancy language or fancy drawings. It's actually just humans talking to each other. I think that, and I, so my wonderment with through technology and through maybe more pioneers that will that coaching will take on many new kinds of forms that we can't even imagine right now. That might, yeah.
Well, so there's a few questions that arise for me as I hear you share this, but one is how, what has allowed you to be David, to what's that journey been like? Or, in a sense, I'm wondering, if you would invite others into that kind of, if people are listening and feeling like, yeah, I resonate with what David's sharing, how would you invite them into that move themselves?
Suffering helps because it's can become a quite a powerful path to awakening.
What do you mean
No, I
by
think
that?
so there's a temptation at times in coaching I find to really over focus on the bright and shiny. And the bright and shiny are great in some ways, but that's not actually where real growth comes from. Most growth comes from some form of suffering and or letting go or some kind of awakening practice, which often is not easy in the beginning. And so I feel like for me, a lot of what's allowed me to be where I am is I'm insatiably curious. I've dedicated a lot of my life to thinking a lot about things and observing as much as I could. I have my own sort of peculiarities, that, as does every human. But I think it's, for me, something I said earlier fits here as well of this will look different for each of us. So being like, I would have no interest in being a techno DJ, although I find it really fascinating. And I totally get your point of kind of going into the flow and just surrendering to the flow. I've had other ways, other pathways to that same experience, but that particular modality has no interest to me, but it fits you, right? So that's part of Joel's path to become who, the best of Joel. And so from my invitation for the listeners is go find what really is your groove, what really opens up these portals to awareness and awakening that I think will help you to mature yourself and find your path. And some that might include some coaching methodologies, some of it might not. You might be a painter, you might be a dancer, you might be an organic gardener, you might be anything that gives you access to the source of life. And connections to earth, connections to others, connections to life and death. It's those vital edges that I think are so critical. And if you can't go there, I think it's going to be increasingly difficult to be a coach because that's where most people live right now, is on those edges. And so for me then, I've never taken I'm not certified in any coaching thing. I've never been to a major coaching program. I have a lot of degrees and I've studied this a lot, but I think just being willing to be brave enough to build up the fundamentals and then go find a path that's yours, not because it's going to become a brand or whatever, but because you're going to bring the best of yourself through channels that are meaningful and organic for you. And so I've just taken what, when I was a child, often were seen as limitations. I was quite shy when I was young, but I was very keenly observant. And I've used those skills, both of them actually, to decenter myself in my work and to be, like I said, profoundly curious about what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing and what I'm feeling. And so, as someone said to me once when they were watching me coach, that your greatest gift is you exquisitely notice what's happening. And yeah, and I said, thank you, because that's what I've tried to cultivate my whole life.
This is, I think, a really interesting place in our conversation because this, I think, speaks to me of this word ensoulment, or being at the edges, this vitality. I met this extraordinary woman the other day, Gail Karen Young, who was, I think, the chief people development officer. I'm probably going to get this wrong, at Wikimedia for many years, and now coaches. High level CEOs around the world and supports movements, these big movements. And that, I think she was a great example of what we're talking about. Like, you could just feel that vital energy in her, And she there was a kind of there was this shine in her eyes, and a kind of she recited this Rilke poem to me, but it totally. It was like there's just like a kind of alchemical moment in our connection because it just opened up some kind of space between us, and I was like, this is what I want in a coach, It's like this, where you meet them and you're like, wow, there's something kind of magical going on here in our connection. And as I hear your story, I hear something similar where, this greatest gift that you have, I think of. This journey I went on, where it relates to what you brought up with the techno DJ, it's like what I noticed, and it made a huge impact in the kind of spaces I could hold, and I think it's why the podcast has done well, is that I look back and I was like, I saw the way I was playing with my Star Wars figures, as a child, and I was like, oh yeah, I would like hold space, and I would create these containers. And then, I wouldn't be going like, yo, boom, boom, bashing them together like the other boys. And then when I was an artist at art school, I'd be enraptured by that moment of emergence. And I was a DJ in nightclubs when I was young, and I was successful. I was playing in, to big crowds of people, and I'd be like holding this space and following the feeling of emergence. And that was the same feeling in my coaching that I would say that's the greatest gift I bring in my coaching, is the ability to follow that sense of aliveness and eros and emergence that can take place. So I think there's something in what we're talking about here where, as a coach or as a practitioner, if you can start to kind of tune into that red thread of your life and look at what are the moments where you felt this sense of elevation, and what were you doing? How were you being? And what are the things that you do consistently that just come so naturally to you? You don't even notice that you're doing it. It's just to you that just seems like the normal way you can be. Because I think this is where we can bring that magic and that sense of what's our unique music to play and how we can touch people. So I wanted to share that because I hear that in what you're sharing, and I think it's where a kind of maturity comes online, and where I think I just want to name this kind of simultaneity where, because you keep talking about having ordinary human conversations, and I love that, and it's like when I hear you talking, it's like I hear extraordinary human conversations too, So it's that beautiful paradox, or it's that simultaneity of both at the same time.
And so maybe, it's interesting. So maybe it's like a two-way street. So maybe it's bringing the extraordinary to ordinary conversations, and helping extraordinary conversations feel more ordinary. So like for me, coaching should be an extension of who you are. It's not adopting, I'm now coaching or I'm now a coach. You're just a human being, using a particular structure or language to have a conversation with somebody. And so what I appreciated by that, and I go back to your action figure comments and your DJ comments about how so much of this, we think of these elevated sort of spiritual practices like Taoism or Buddhism and presence to what is and all these things, but it's really what this is all about is can I remain present to the what is of this moment I'm in? Can I regulate myself to be able to hold that and be with that and let what I should be doing arise? And it comes back to again, in our work, we talk a lot about how just remembering that everything you need is right in front of you. And so just keep coming back to that moment. And as you would have in music, you'd have to make these little micro adjustments based on the mood of the crowd and what's happening and what they might need. And the same thing with your action figures and same thing with clients. It's like you're in this sort of, you're in this dance, this co-created dance with them. I find that that's just a really fascinating metaphor. And for me, when I used to do a lot more like ecstatic dance and things, a part of what I enjoyed about that was losing myself in flow, and it became a really important resource for me to, as a shy person, to find a way to come into my inner experience and back out again, and then respond to my outer experience and bring that back in, and then it became this for me. A really guiding analogy or experience around what I feel like when I'm doing well in my work, that I'm feel both present and I've lost myself because I'm now part of the flow.
Yeah, I really do hear this sense of like connoisseurship, and maybe that's the 'cause like I wonder for some people, maybe that in a way it's this paradox again. It is about them being just themselves, but actually the way they are, if they follow that path, the way they are being just themselves is kind of extraordinary, is unique. And in a sense, I think I'm wrestling with, and this maybe we feel differently about this, but it's like I do feel like it's having ordinary human conversations, but I also don't, like I know like these conversations I have with my clients, and they're incredibly practical. But at the same time, like what they appreciate is that we're not just talking about the, we're not just stuck in a kind of, and I'm not saying this is what you're saying, by the way, but we're not just kind of going around in a kind of habituated, identified view of their lives and what the world is, but actually it that there is a kind of sacredness, or there is an invitation into the mystery of the moment, and a sense of, and something opens up, sometimes the numinous opens up, and actually, so I think I want to take a stand for that too, that it's like it's not about being elitist or grandiose or caught in being needing to be special, but it's just, but at the same time, there's just this specialness that's unfolding.
And I would agree. And like for me, it's I think part of it is just for a lot of coaches, this sometimes they internalize an expectation. I have to go learn all these things, and I have to learn all these words and these theories, and which can be really important and really informative. So I don't devalue them. I've got a PhD in them, so I appreciate them. But I also think that again, if we just remember that we should be able to hold a conversation with a client that doesn't require them to understand lots of special words or things. They don't really care that much. They're more interested in their own growth and their own achievements or whatever they're after from coaching. But for me, it's part of what I've tried to do over my years is to figure out how do I translate all these things I've studied and thought about into language that somebody could understand and do something with, even if they had never studied any of those things themselves. And I think that's really the challenge that I find really exciting. And sometimes I succeed at that, sometimes not, because I like the refinement that often comes with more exact language or more sort of scholarly language. But I also realize that most of the world doesn't live that way. So I try to like, how do I weave this into, and so like if you were DJing, so you understand things about acoustics and and waves and sound and all these things, the science of music, but the audience doesn't care. They just want to feel good and have a wonderful experience, right? So you're translating your knowledge of music and people and energy and into experiences that are going to be of value to the people on the dance floor. And I think in many ways, those of us who do coaching, if and I'm it's in my inverted commas, that's a lot of I think what we're doing. We're curating, we're channeling experiences that take what we know, and be in that with people as opposed to having to necessarily always use the words.
Yeah, and I'm with you in that, totally with you. I love that. And I do feel, I'm thinking to what you shared at the beginning about the elemental and the rituals and that yeah, I'm into some stuff and I geek out in some stuff that most people don't care about. And there's nothing worse than kind of espousing some kind of, elevated spiritual view that people, that's the way should others should be, and you're trying to it. But so I do, and then there's just people I meet, in a sense, maybe it's about for me, like maybe there's a way that I show up with people and they feel something there and they're like, it touches them. And it's not about, I'm not making it about me, but it's like, yeah, that I know there's people I've met, like this lady I talked about, Gail Karen Young, like that was a really inspiring meeting. And there was something about her aliveness and her depth that just touched me. And I so enjoyed marinating in that. And so I also think about, I love this idea that ritual, what collective rituals, like what if coaching could, are some of the things that's good about coaching could kind of proliferate it more into collective rituals within organizations, within society, and that because I feel that that is such an untapped possibility for collective transformation that, where people don't even we're not even talking about transformation. It's not it's just the ritual itself. Like in the olden days, people used to go to church more and sing together. And actually, that was a lot of the way Christianity was practiced. People didn't even read the Bible and reflect on its meaning. So, what are those kinds of that to me feels amazing. Like the ritual I went to, where it was like the end of summer celebration for my daughter's school, and everybody cooked food. And we all took food, and there was games, and we gathered and we ate together, and we talked, and the incredible weather helped, but it felt so wholesome, and I came back with joy in my heart.
That sounds fantastic. And I think part of what I'm hearing in that, Joel, is sort of like deconstructing coaching and taking the parts and making them available in new forms, and making them available to people in in neighborhoods and in schools and in organizations. So thinking about where this might take us, and then I think there's two pieces that stand out for me. One is that this, I think we, I'm curious about how can we form stronger senses of community. So rites of passage traditionally had a strong community element, both in terms of holding space and creating ritual, but also it was a time when a sacred set off time when which communities would evolve by virtue of what the people going through the process would reveal about the community. And so I just feel like there's a, rather than try to transform coaching or whatever, it's more about taking the best of what coaching offered and figure out what other forms could we offer that to the world in a time when I think it's more important than ever.
Yeah, nice, nice. And we're coming to the end of our time. Is there anything you want to share just as a like a last reflection? Maybe not, maybe we've said it all, but
Who knows? No, I appreciate these dialogues, and I feel like, again, it's something that I would like to see more of. If you imagine if again, if you had a gathering of people where everybody put something in, and we just came together and we had a whole series of these conversations. And maybe you invited each person to come to the event with a question that's on your heart or on your mind. And then you just move around and you talk to people and you listen to people and maybe have quiet times for journaling and commitments to yourself. And then maybe there's some time at the end for people to share, like what emerged for you out of these conversations. And it wouldn't be called coaching, but it would use, there'd be coaching processes present. And, like I said, I feel like we're trapped in this assumption that coaching has to occur in this bounded period of time. And I think that's a piece of the puzzle, but actually I think increasingly a small piece. And it mores maybe brief interactions, lots of experimentation, reflections, connections, practices, and then back to a little small conversation. Or I feel like there's a call for new forms. To free the spirit of what coaching was intended for, and making it more available and relevant for the time we're in, and I would find that very exciting.
So maybe one of those questions is, what if we were to reimagine the ecology of coaching and reimagine the practice ecology of coaching? I'm
And
not
I think
formulating
that.
that perfectly, but that
No.
feels like that could be a really inspiring collective inquiry and maybe this is the seed for gathering in that kind of way. So yeah, David,
Yeah.
thanks so much. I've had fun,
Sure.
and we just
Yeah.
this is a kind of more informal kind of just coming together and sharing our
Yeah.
thoughts. And so yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Joel.
Do you want to actually just name anywhere where people could check out what you're up to next around these kind of topics?
Yeah, so we're in the middle of rebuilding our website because we're going to be launching. This is our last year to offer programs. We're building a whole new ecosystem, kind of in line with what we're saying here. But you can find us at themomentinstitute.com.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is for me the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches, because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com. Put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.